I think times have gotten more censorious in the last year, but at the same time, a lot has happened good. A lot of things have changed. It's the freest it's ever been. All my movies have the same message. Mind your own business. Let other people live. And if you have something that's strange that society doesn't approve of, you can always, once you make friends with that neuroses, exaggerate it, turn it into a style, and win.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. This week, our award-winning entertainment reporter Steve Pride recalls some of the most memorable queer moments seen on big and small screens during the past year. NewsWrap will return next week. And now, as you dim the house lights and pass the popcorn, here's Pride on Screen 2004.
Queer cinema is as old as the motion picture. In fact, this year, Kino Video released several gay-themed silent films on DVD, the oldest of which was a German drama called Different from Others that first premiered in 1919. Although a plea for tolerance, its story of gay lovers, blackmail, and suicide only foreshadowed films to come. But those dire films had to wait a few years, because the 1930 enactment of the Motion Picture Production Code prohibited any depiction of or inference to sexual perversion. That's us. So for the next 30 years, you had to read between the lines to find us on screen. This provision wasn't lifted until October of 1961, just in time for a slew of gay-themed films without happy endings.
A taut, tense drama of the most untalked-about subject of our time.
First came a British import called Victim.
I want to know the truth. I want to know why he hanged himself.
He was being blackmailed.
That's why he stole?
Yes.
Someone found out he was a homosexual and blackmailed him.
That's it.
It takes two to make a reason for blackmail. Were you the other man? Were you?
A few months later, the Children's Hour debuted.
You've got to know. I've got to tell you, I can't keep it to myself any longer. I'm guilty. You're guilty of nothing.
And if the message wasn't clear enough, in 1962, Hollywood released the political parable, Advice and Consent.
He said to tell you, before you go on with the Leffingwell matter, you ought to remember what happened in Hawaii. And then he hung up. What happened in Hawaii, Brig?
What was the voice like?
It was crawly. He made it sound like he knew some kind of nasty secret.
Is that Brig? What's the matter?
He's dead.
Brig.
In his office. Cut his throat.
And there was nothing gay about being gay in 1968's The Detective.
The thought of turning involuntarily into one of them frightened me and made me sick with anger.
I went down there. I had heard about the waterfront. People giggle and make jokes about it.
I had had only two experiences before, once in college, once in the army.
I thought I'd gotten it out of my life, but I hadn't. I looked at them. Was this what I was like? Oh, my God. Twisted faces, outcasts. Lives lived in shadows, always prey to a million dangers. People don't realize what we go through. I was raised in a family that would not even admit that there was such a thing as a homosexual in this world. And here I was. And I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't stop.
By the end of the decade, it was so bad that even the characters within the film started to notice the pattern.
Well, I'll tell you something, Hallie. When the time comes, you won't have the guts. It's not always like it happens in plays. Not all faggots bump themselves off at the end of the story.
Luckily, times changed. In 1971, a year after The Boys in the Band, the British import Sunday Bloody Sunday brought the first passionate gay kiss to the screen. And although its significance is often overlooked, the 1972 film Cabaret reassured many a gay boy.
Doesn't my body drive you wild with desire?
Well, doesn't it?
It's a very nice book.
Oh, do you really think so, darling? It does have a certain kind of style. I mean, look, it's very flat here. Not much hips. And, here.
It's a little early in the day for this sort of thing, isn't it?
Maybe you just don't sleep with girls. Oh. You don't. Well, listen, we're practically living together. So if you only like boys, I mean, I wouldn't dream of pestering you. Well, do you sleep with girls or don't you?
Sally, you don't ask questions like that.
I do.
We were fun in the 1970s. The Rocky Horror Picture Show debuted in 1975 and the Ritz in 1976.
We're three caballeros, three gay caballeros. They say we are birds of a feather.
You mean to tell me that everybody here is,
We're happy amigos no matter where he goes.
Although it's hard to believe, both Cruising and the Village People's Can't Stop the Music came out only 4 months apart in 1980. That was a mixed message. But the first big gay films to actually put us front and center, to really explore our lives in a positive way, were both released in 1982. Personal Best and Making Love. Finally, there was Pride on Screen.
Okay. The truth is, I have gotten into a lot of different scenes. I'm a writer. I have to open myself up to new things. Expand my horizons. Bart... Zach,
why don't you just say it?
I'm gay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So where are we 24 years later? What are the best gay films of 2004? It depends on who you are. For me, my top five list starts with a very personal film a gay New York City doorman made on his iMac.
What prompted you and Grandma to start administering shock treatments to her over and over again? Who talked you into that?
It was the doctors.
Didn't you think that electricity on the brain at that time could have been harmful?
No.
I'm wondering if Mommy would have never had the shock treatments, if she would have been normal, if she would have not had to deal with anything like this.
Any illnesses. She's normal. She gets depressed once in a while.
She gets delusional.
With the film Tarnation, Jonathan Coet turned a lifetime of home movies, answering machine messages, and memories into the amazing story of a mentally ill mother and growing up gay in Texas.
This is Jonathan Coet. I'm the director of Tarnation. I was out of the closet by the time I was 11. It was more of a punk rock kind of thing. It was like, I'm gay. And then, like, as I was sort of discovering that I was gay, you know, so it was this sort of weird double juxtaposition of it. But I think I was really, truly, knowingly out by the time I was 13. But I definitely started saying it when I was 11 as a way to sort of maybe see how the universe would react around me. This is like a gay Southern Jew growing up in Houston in the early 80s. I don't recommend being gay or creative in Texas. It was horrible. I had the worst experience in high school ever, and I inevitably ended up dropping out and getting my GED and never went to formal college. I'm not the most articulate, well-spoken guy necessarily in the world, but one of my saving graces was watching loads of movies, which sort of inevitably became my film school in a way, and being exposed to, like, going to these gay teen goth clubs, running around with all kinds of characters, like everything from, like, you know, art fags to pedophiles to film cynics. And I mean, these were all real people that actually lived in Houston. And learning what I could from a lot of these people and certainly risking my life in a lot of ways. It's a life that I can look back on objectively and say, wow, wasn't that interesting? But it's a life I wouldn't necessarily wish on my own son, who's 9 years old now. And God forbid if he dresses up as a goth girl and goes into gay bars and tries to sleep with older men.
Rodney Evans' debut film, Brother to Brother, was a riveting look at black writer Bruce Nugent and the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s.
My name's Rodney Evans, a filmmaker,
director, writer, producer of the film Brother to Brother. I think there are huge reasons why the Harlem Renaissance is important. I think the film is really zeroing in on this younger generation within the Renaissance that, you know, was very rebellious and bold and confrontational. And I think the overall ideology in the Black community at that time was that Black art really needed to uplift the race. And it was about this kind of social propaganda. And you really had to kind of have positive portrayals in your art to sort of prove to white people that you were worthy of their respect.
Times changed. The Depression set in, and people really thought our excesses was what brought it on.
Why?
Well, the idea was that we weren't out being good, productive workers because we were too busy giving in to our base desires. And Blacks and queers were the vices that needed to be cleaned up to get the country back on its feet. White people ran back downtown almost as quickly as they'd come up. It never really was the same. That sense of risk and magic was gone.
Well, maybe you can get a little bit of it back tonight.
This generation, which included Bruce and Zora Neale Hurston and Langston Hughes and Wallace Thurman, really took a stand and said, you know, there are other aspects of our lives that we're interested in depicting in art. And, you know, some of it is positive and some of it is very gritty and realistic and deals with the experiences that we have every day. So you have Bruce dealing with homosexuality in the first piece of Black gay fiction called Smoke, Lilies, and Jade. You have Wallace Thurman dealing with prostitution in a story called Cordelia the Crude. You have Zora Neale Hurston kind of weaving all sorts of like Southern folklore into her stories, which had never really been done before, writing in a Southern dialect. You have Langston dealing with class issues. And so I think it's important because they were the real trailblazers as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I think were incredibly brave in being able to talk about things that were considered taboo.
Stage beauty took us back to a time when only men were allowed to portray women on stage. And the film was much more than Billy Crudup wearing pretty dresses and having sex with Ben Chaplin, although that would have been enough.
I just wanted to act. I just wanted to do what you do.
But madam, I have worked half my life to do what I do. With 14 boys crammed in a cellar, do you know when I was in training for this profession, I was not permitted to wear a woman's dress for 3 long years. I was not permitted to wear a wig for 4, not until I had proved that I had eliminated every masculine gesture, every masculine intonation from my very being. What teacher did you learn from? What cellar was your home?
I had no teacher, nor such a classroom. But then I had less need of training.
Actor Billy Crudup.
For me, I found it an interesting exploration of sexuality as identity. That the ways in which we define each other sexually is somewhat arbitrary, that maybe things don't exist on a coin, that you're either male or female or heterosexual or homosexual, that maybe sexuality exists on a continuum, and that we don't always exist on one place on that continuum between, say, heterosexuality and homosexuality, that we have moments where we appear over here and we exist most notably in this spectrum here, and that's a more interesting way of describing what it means to be a human and express yourself sexually than labeling one way or the other for the process of reducing it so we can comprehend it or something.
Kinsey, outrider Bill Condon's tribute to the sex researcher who forever changed America and slept with at least one man along the way.
While we're all different in this very private part of our lives,
writer-director Bill Condon,
we all have this great desire to feel that we're the same as everybody else, that we're normal. That's how sex histories would often end. Am I normal? Am I normal? Is this typical? People are intent on finding that out. And for Kinsey, in that time, and I think for us today, the tension is between our individual natures and the desire to fit into the group. And so often, we kind of sacrifice what our individuality is in order to feel that we're fitting in with what everybody else does.
It's just another reminder of how little things have changed in our society.
What are you talking about? Things have gotten much better.
Oh, what happened?
Well, you did, of course. After I read your book, I realized how many other women were in the same situation. I mustered the courage to talk to my friend, and she told me to my great surprise, that the feelings were mutual. We've been together for 3 happy years now. You saved my life, sir.
I think that he was a mass of contradictions. This was somebody who was asking America to tell the truth and be completely open about all their sexual activity, while at the same time it turns out that he was being quite secretive about his own. He was somebody who was taking this complicated human behavior and trying to turn it into data that could fit into boxes on a piece of graph paper in order to prove that people can't be categorized.
Last on my list, but first in my heart, is the Spanish import bad education. Pedro Almodovar's multi-layered look at murder, lost loves, drag queens, pedophile priests, and choir boys.
Hello, this is Todd Haynes, the writer-director of Bar from Heaven.
Hi, I'm Margaret Cho.
Hello, this is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm comedian Bob Smith.
Hi, I'm Kate Clinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
Hi, I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, I'm Scott Thompson.
Hi, I'm David Sedaris.
Hi, this is Jeff Straker.
Hi, this is Chastity Bono, and you're listening to
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
And this is a look at Pride on Screen. In 2004, there were a number of wonderful documentaries. Superstar in a House Dress was the story of Warhol film star Jackie Curtis.
I'm Craig Heiberger. More than anything, I wanted to commemorate Jackie Curtis as one of the great personalities of his time, as a great writer of plays, as a great performance artist, as a great poet, but more than anything, as a real groundbreaking personality who wasn't afraid to be himself. Jackie's greatest quote, I think, is, "I'm not gay, I'm not straight, I'm not a transsexual, I'm not a transvestite, I'm just me, Jackie."
Key West, City of Colors, was not only moving, it made me want to move there.
Regardless of your faith, your sexuality, your race, there's an acceptance, not just a tolerance. I hate that word. We should teach tolerance. No, we shouldn't. We shouldn't. You shouldn't just have to tolerate me. We should teach acceptance and accept people for who they are, regardless, not just tolerance. Tolerance is pretty pitiful, if you ask me.
There were several documentaries about gay marriage, but the best of the lot was called Tying the Knot.
My name is Jim DeSev. I'm the director of a new film called Tying the Knot. I had been one of these people who was very much thinking that, well, the gay community should be able to form its own sort of existence, you know, the gay nation, as it were. We shouldn't be relying or trying to mimic the straight system or the straight way of being. And marriage is archaic anyway, and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And as I started investigating it, I came, I think, to a sense of appreciating the reality of what marriage is and realizing that if there are these unparalleled numbers of rights, why should gay and lesbian couples be denied those rights, either on the state or the federal level?
A strong America must value the institution of marriage. Activist judges, however, have begun redefining marriage by court order without regard for the will of the people and their elected representatives. If judges insist on forcing their arbitrary will upon the people, the only alternative left to the people would be the constitutional process. Our nation must defend the sanctity of marriage.
There were so many other wonderful examples of Pride on Screen this year. The lesbian comedy Mango Kiss, the transgender thriller Transfixed, a moving and beautiful adaptation of Michael Cunningham's novel A Home at the End of the World, and a melodic biography of Cole Porter called De Lovely.
You know, I've never had the urge to be completely honest with anyone until you. It's quite disturbing, especially since I haven't been totally honest.
You knew so much about me when we met, Cole. Don't you think I'd heard a thing or two about you?
Then you know about, well, that I can be that I have other interests. Interests the pursuit of which some people might find cruel to you.
You mean men?
Yes, men.
Let's just say you like them more than I do.
2004 also saw a plethora of gay video companies like Wolf Video and TLA entering the theatrical distribution arena. Wolf with the Italian potboiler Adored and TLA with the romantic Latter Days. Arizona-based Aristical Entertainment took it a step further and began actually producing films, the best of which was Q. Alan Baraka's Eating Out.
If only I were gay. Honey, come out or stay in. Do not hash me into a Mariah.
I don't mean literally.
Oh, of course, illiterally.
You know what I mean.
You know. It's easy for us to get chicks, too. Straight girls love gay boys. I could get any girl I wanted.
There were hundreds of gay films released on DVD, too many to mention, but everyone should own a season of The L Word or Boy Meets Boy.
Previously on Boy Meets Boy, James, our gay leading man, has been living a life of romantic adventure, searching for that one special someone amongst 15 handsome suitors.
As for gay TV, just turn on your set.
Okay, Jack, I need to talk to you, and I need you to be someone other than Jack. God, you're like the fourth person who said that to me today.
I'm not screwed up because I'm gay. I'm screwed up because I'm a screw-up. It's what I do. And I know I could have been a whole lot of things, but I'm just Jimmy. I like guys and drinking and art. That's me. And if I can live with it, so can you.
Your Honor, the child in question, who my client shared his secret with, that child was in pain. Being a good Santa Claus, Gil Fernald sought to relieve that pain.
By telling him he was a homosexual.
Those three little words again.
We have to talk about this.
Right. I mean, just because it's weird doesn't mean we can't handle it. We're brothers.
Right. I got you something.
Hey, I got you something.
Really?
See, this is what I'm talking about. We're being open and supportive and honest with each other. Here.
What's this?
It's called If You're Gay, It's Okay. It's full of great resources. What's this?
Naughty Pool Boys 3. I watched 10 or 12 of these, and this one seems to have the most stuff you guys like.
Wait. I'm not gay. You're gay.
No, I'm not. You are.
I'm not gay.
Malcolm, check out what they're doing in that movie and then tell me you're not gay.
For the trivia buffs, that was Will and Grace, Jack and Bobby, Boston Legal, and Malcolm in the Middle. A few times this year, it almost seemed like you couldn't change the channel without finding a gay character or a gay plot line. But the real action was on Showtime, where the L Word rocked, and Queer as Folk continued to be first rate.
My name is Robert Gant, and I play Ben Bruckner, professor of gay studies. Queer as Folk is important because it is quite literally changing the world. I have to say that I, on a daily basis, get emails from around the world from people who thank us for what we're doing because they've finally been able to confront their sexuality issues, finally been able to be honest with their parents, with their friends, and finally feel freedom. And, you know, for people who have been imprisoned for a very long time, freedom is our ultimate goal, and we're helping to give that to people and to ourselves.
This year, Here TV has jumped from satellite to cable, bringing 24 hours of original gay programming and queer film into your home. In February of 2005, MTV is scheduled to launch a second gay channel called Logo. Anyway, there you have it. Pride on Screen in 2004. Beefs, rants, and final thoughts go to a trio of my favorite peeps. Paul Kolickman was the producer of Gods and Monsters and is president of the Here TV cable channel. Although 2004 was an amazing year in film, he thinks queer filmmakers have a lot more to accomplish in 2005.
We haven't normalized gayness yet. It needs not to be the center of the movie. It's all about, we're gay, it's a film about being gay and gay people doing gay things. It's like, no, no, no. You're a cop, but you happen to be gay, but you're also on the trail of a serial killer. We all have hundreds of gay friends. Most of our friends do real jobs. They do something real. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they're accountants. They live in the real world. But we don't get to see people in the real world. We see people in this kind of altered gay universe through most film. I would say idealized, but I'm not quite sure whose ideal it is, but certainly altered state of existence.
Sasha Rice, the director of Mango Kiss, isn't sure Hollywood is to blame for the scarcity of great lesbian films this year.
The statistics show that gay men have more disposable income than lesbians, and so there's that. And then also, gay men statistically go see movies more than lesbians, so there's that. To really kind of make money at the box office, even if you're just doing home box office, you need a theatrical to kind of make that money. And the gay men go out and they see the movies, and the lesbians, I think, tend to stay home. And shame on you. You got to get out there and support it.
And the final word goes to filmmaker John Waters, who believes at the end of 2004, queer film and the gay community are in pretty good shape.
I think times have gotten more censorious in the last year, but at the same time, I think we're the freest we've ever been. I mean, who ever would imagine that gay marriage could have been legal anywhere when you went to jail for being gay when I was in high school? So words that Lenny Bruce went to jail about are now routinely on sitcoms. So a lot has happened good. A lot of things have changed. It's the freest it's ever been. All my movies have the same message. Mind your own business. Let other people live. And if you have something that's strange that society doesn't approve of, you can always, once you make friends with that neuroses, exaggerate it, turn it into a style, and win.
For This Way Out, this is Steve Pride. For more information on any of the films I've mentioned, point your internet browser to prideonscreen.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Steve Pride brought us Pride on Screen 2004, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. This Way Out is supported by tax-deductible charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. It's you, our listeners, who keep this program on the air, and you can get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs as a bonus. For all the details, or for audio cassette subscription information, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. Thanks to Alternabid and the Stonewall Society, you can bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out. Look for the This Way Out auction area at alternabid.com. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Happy 2005, and thanks for listening on shortwave station RFPI, Radio for Peace International, on the World Radio Network, and on more than 150 local stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.